Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guests on today's podcast are a father and son team, Lawrence and Brian Fugel. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Tell us how to say your last name, because I think I just botched it.
Fugel.
Fugel. Yep. F-U-G-A-L. And just to give you a little backstory of the podcast we're going to get into here, we are going to talk. Brian is in his 30s. He's married, has three kids, active LDS, served a mission in Brazil. And Brian is here with his father, Lawrence, who is about 60. We're not going to give you a definite age here, Lawrence. And Lawrence is gay. And when Brian was about 10, Lawrence came out, left his marriage, and has since had some same-sex relationships, and we're going to just talk about how this family stayed together, how Brian and his father have stayed together and are friends, and there's a lot of differences in this family, but there's a lot of common ground, and it's a story of finding common ground and honoring differences, and it's a beautiful story, and I became aware of this story when Jen Lee Smith sent me information about a short movie. I don't know if we'd call it a movie, Brian.
Short film.
Yep. A short film that you created. And we'll get into more of that, but just give our listeners a little intro on the film, the name of the film, and just so we can kind of set the stage, but we'll come back to the film.
For sure. So the name of the film is Long Haul. Long Haul is a semi-autobiographical film based off of my own and my father's life, as well as some other people, you know, combining stories within my family, about a boy who goes on a weekend trip, delivery trip with his dad, who is a trucker. And during this trip, he has to reconcile with his father, who has come out as gay.
And how would a listener find this film?
That's a good question. It's still in the festival circuit right now.
Okay.
So we're hoping that it gets picked up for distribution. It's harder to sell a short film.
Mm-hmm.
If at the very least, it will probably end up on YouTube if nothing else happens with it. But we've had some interest in getting it purchased for streaming platforms. Hopefully, I won't say exactly because there's no deals in place yet, but there's some interest right now on getting it streamed.
Good. And we're recording this podcast in March of 2019, so there may be more information out when you listen to this podcast. Lawrence offered a beautiful prayer before we started. Lawrence is a member of the Episcopal faith, and there's differences here with different faiths that we all have, but I sort of think we're all God's children and worthy of his love, and he wants us to find common ground in our differences, and you just offered a wonderful prayer. It really touched my soul, and I set the stage for this podcast. I pray our listeners will feel the spirit of Brian and Lawrence's story. And what I would say, the gospel principles or the Christ-like principles that give them common ground to have a great relationship as a father or son. Talk about, Lawrence, talk about just your journey. Where did you grow up?
Born and raised, in Pleasant Grove,
okay.
Utah County. Fourth generation Mormon.
Okay. Did you serve a mission?
Yeah, active in the church, served a mission to the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
Came back, went to BYU for 2 years, married, went to, was regular at the temple, married in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
My ex-wife had a son before we married, which I helped raise, and then we had three kids, so a total of four kids.
Four kids, so you're living this typical Mormon life, raising your kids in Utah County, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Brian's 10, so you're in your 40s?
Mid-30s, yeah.
Mid-30s, mm-hmm. and you come out as gay.
Right.
Why did you come out?
I came to a point in my life where I realized that I had married under circumstances that were not optimal.
Uh-huh.
There was a lot of pressure at that time from the church, a lot of pressure from the church. To get married and to get married young. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know, this is in the late 70s, early 80s, where if you were a returned missionary and you hadn't married within a few short years, you became suspect.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of pressure from my family to get married. I think my family had a sense that there might be something going on with me from the standpoint of maybe being gay, not wanting to talk about it, just wanting to make it go away. And so they felt like, and at that time the church was actually preaching that if you followed these certain steps, right, followed this path, that you could come out of that sense, or, you know, come out of that reality, right, of being gay and heal yourself, if you will. My family believing that, the church believing that. And so, but knowing in my heart that it wasn't that simple, and knowing that I was probably at some point in my life going to have to deal with the gay issue. And as I came along towards being married 10 years, I realized that I just didn't want to keep prolonging a lie. I felt the need for myself and for my kids to see an honest man have to face a difficult situation. And so prior to our 10-year anniversary, I separated and divorced my wife.
And I'm really sensitive, and I just appreciate you sharing some of that, because I didn't really understand what society and what I think most religions, including our church, was teaching, is that if you were gay or same-sex attraction, whatever label you take on, and you go into a straight marriage, a mixed orientation marriage, that that would sort of cure you.
Right.
And so I recognize that here you're going through this divorce that you recognize as causing pain in people that you care about.
Right.
But I'm pretty sympathetic in the sense I'm not sure you did anything wrong here.
Well, now I don't. Now I strongly believe that. But having just come out of, or having, being LDS at the time and believing that I was sinning, I'm using quotes, sinning, which I don't believe is the case now in hindsight, but at the time believing that I was sinning and causing pain, there was a lot of guilt, and that's sometimes caused through beliefs that you are taught rightly or wrongly through your life from a religious standpoint.
And so I have empathy for you in the sense that I sense you didn't want to get divorced to hurt anybody. It was unsustainable.
Exactly.
And I would assume your emotional health was being challenged during this time, and perhaps feelings of suicide.
Yes.
Looking at very different options, suicide or coming out. And so I think our listeners are aware of what Elder Oaks is, maybe 5 years or 10 years ago, that we do not recommend a heterosexual marriage to solve same-sex attraction. But you lived before that statement.
Yes.
And so I honor just the difficulty of your road, Lawrence, and you are trying to do the very best you can. And some mixed orientation marriages work. We've done some podcasts, and I've felt that those really can work. So I've kind of evolved that I would never ask you to have stayed in that marriage somehow if I'd known you, because there's examples of it working. I think every situation is different, and I would never project someone else's situation on you and say, that's how you do it. I think everybody's got to do this their own way and work with God and their personal agency to decide what the best path is.
Right.
Do you remember, you're 10 years old, and most parents don't get divorced, Brian. Can you share with us just kind of what was going through your mind at this point?
Well, when they got divorced, I didn't really know what was going on. And I remember I was sad about it, but when my dad came out, you know, everybody sat down, and, you know, mom and dad sat us all down and said, okay, well, I don't remember exactly who said it, but essentially they said, okay, well, dad is gay. And we felt like we needed to tell everybody. And my 10-year-old mind had no idea what that meant.
Right.
And my only thought was, can I go outside and play now? You know, so it didn't,
it's probably a relief.
Yeah, it didn't matter to me. Yeah, I think maybe they were worried. My older siblings probably didn't take it quite as easily as I did, but I don't really remember very well. But in hindsight, I think it was better for me because of that to have that come out before it's something I could even understand. So when I did start to understand what that meant, I was already prepared for that. And within the teachings of the church, and especially my mom, she's always been such a She tried to prepare us after the separation. She tried to prepare us for the news in that she was telling us to, that we should always love each other no matter what. You know, just the things that we learn at church that we should be applying to these kind of situations that some of us sometimes forget. And so both of my parents were instrumental in preparing us for dealing with this difficult situation for kids to be in, and the news that my dad had come out as gay. But
so I think you got divorced, and I think you left for California. Is that right, Lawrence?
Mm-hmm.
What was the custody arrangement? Was your dad in your life? Did you see him regularly, and how did that work?
On average, I think it was about supposed to be once a month, right?
Every other weekend.
Every other weekend, which because of the long distance ended up being about once a month or once every 2 months.
Every other month, yeah.
Yeah, which was great. I mean, I didn't know any differently, and we looked forward to the times we got to hang out with dad and do fun things with dad, stay
what
at a hotel.
What kind of fun things did you do with dad?
Stay at a hotel.
At age 14, 15, 16, 17.
I mean, just going
staying
to
staying at a hotel is fun.
That's fun because there's a pool.
And having a pool.
Yeah. And he would always.
The ice machine.
Elevators.
Elevators.
Yeah. He would always try to make it fun for us, no matter what the situation was. My aunt was very helpful in that regard. She would let us all stay at her place.
My sister.
Your sister.
Yeah. In Provo. So when I traveled to Utah, we would stay with her sometimes, or I'd stay in a hotel sometimes. When they came to California, then they would stay with me in my home.
Yeah. I love your sister was in your life during this time.
Yes.
And she was kind of like a grandma, and almost, I would dare say, like
age-wise,
a mom to you.
Yeah. Yeah. 20 years older than me.
Wow.
So she was very helpful in that, and one of the more understanding siblings. Maybe you're better speaking about this than I am, but yeah, she helped out a lot in terms of helping us have somewhere to stay sometimes and facilitating the visits.
Did you feel like you needed to choose between parents, your Mormon mother and your father that was not in the church and sort of and not, I think at this time you may have had a partner, a same-sex partner. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you needed to choose between parents, or did you feel like your religion required you to choose between parents, or did you feel comfortable having a relationship with both parents?
I felt comfortable having a relationship with both parents. I never felt like I had to choose. I was always defensive about having to choose, so yeah, I don't think I ever felt like I had to choose.
Good.
I felt pretty strongly that I believed what I believed in, and that I learned over the years, I don't know how, it must have evolved over time, that I could love my dad and, have him in my life, even though he wasn't in the same religion as me anymore, or, he was gay, and that's something that the church teaches is either a bad thing or a sin or whatever. I just took my life as it was given to me, and I decided that I wanted to have my family in my life regardless. And so.
What a great principle. I wanted to have my family in my life and didn't see boundaries or differences.
Yeah. I mean, it was tough sometimes, but for the most part, it was a pretty easy decision to make.
Lawrence, some people I meet when they leave the church, they leave God and they just, they can't, I'm not trying to be judgmental, but other people, if they step away from our church, are able to continue to have a relationship with God. Did you go through a period of time when you didn't believe in God or you didn't have a relationship with God and then found the Episcopal Church? Or as you left Mormonism, did you have a belief in God the whole time?
I did. I was fortunate. Some LGBTQ people blame religion/God for the pain that they have experienced. Coming out in Los Angeles made it so that there was a larger community that I was able to encircle myself with. I never stopped believing in God. I questioned religion and I questioned people of religion. But I was fortunate that I never felt that God was absent. And in fact, one of the stronger spiritual experiences of my entire life happened on the very day that I was excommunicated from the church, where I had the presence of God in my mind. I was standing in the parking lot of the stake center in Burbank. I had gone through the excommunication. I walked out. I was just completely overwhelmed with the fact that, you know, my forefathers came to the United States to practice Mormonism. And here I willfully and, you know, gladly at that time stepped away and was excommunicated from the church because I felt the strong need to be honest. But I was overwhelmed at that moment. And I felt, as I was standing there in this parking lot at the stake center, I felt the presence of God in my mind say, "You're fine. I created you just the way you are. Now just get on with your life." And that if I hadn't had that experience, then I could have definitely had moments when I would question God. But that was so strong in my mind. I didn't hear a voice. It wasn't a vision. I'm not trying to say that I had any sort of that, but it was just a very strong voice in my mind and had a very maternal, that's why I don't use gender in discussing God, because it felt very maternal in that moment and that presence.
Thanks for sharing that experience. I believe God loves all of his children, and he wants all of them to feel his love, and nothing that we can do can take us outside of God's love. That is one of my beliefs, and why you had stepped away from the church, and I invite everybody to stay in the church. But if someone steps away, I love the idea that God will continue to be with them.
Absolutely.
And that God will continue. I would, as a parent, like you and I, all three of us are fathers of children. I think that's the best framework. You know, none of my kids could ever take themselves outside of my love for them.
And quite honestly, Richard, I felt in some ways strong that my faith and God's presence in my life was even stronger after being honest and coming out of the closet. It felt like that honesty removed a small barrier between me and God that I had been feeling, trying to be straight and trying to be married and trying to be something that I wasn't.
And did your emotional health improve during this time as you founded the Episcopal faith and had these personal feelings?
Well, it took time, both in spiritual direction. As I mentioned, there was a priest in the Episcopal church in Pasadena, All Saints Episcopal Church, that we did spiritual direction, which is like spiritual therapy. And because I was trying to understand Mormonism versus the other Christian, you know, the broader Christian beliefs. And it was all new, because all I had ever known is Mormonism. And Mormonism is so different from the other Christian practices and traditions and beliefs. And so I went through that process. And then I had to get into, mental health therapy, you know, working with the therapist for many, many years.
That's honest.
Many years. And so between spiritual direction and therapy, I made that transition to where I could accept myself, accept others, especially my kids who wanted to stay in Mormonism, and accept a God on a different level than I had known before.
I kind of look at it sometimes that God is comfortable with 99% of his children not being in the church I believe in, so maybe I can be okay with it too. And so when I see someone like you not in our faith, yeah, I wish you were in our faith. I wish there was a way to make it work, but I kind of just leave that at the Savior's feet and try not to see you as somebody that's in or out of our faith. Just see you for the good you're contributing to society and your relationship with your family and a lot of things that I don't know about you that are good that you've done for others. And so that's the way I'm trying to see more. And when we're studying the New Testament this year in the church, it gives me more examples and more parables as a doctrinal foundation to see that way. Talk about how you navigated this space with the LDS church not working for you, but having children being raised in the LDS church. Did you feel a need to pull them out of the LDS church?
No.
That seems unusual to me.
No, I mean, I accepted me.
But I don't have enough experience to know if that's unusual or not. Yeah. So that's why you're on the podcast.
Right. I knew what was important for me, but I don't extrapolate that into what is important for others. So if my kids wanted to stay and follow in with their mother in that spiritual journey and that spiritual path, I'm fine with that. As long as my only boundary was, as long as we didn't get into a situation where they were trying to pull me out of who I was and the honest person coming out and being out gay, and the fact that they would try and convert me or to try and pull me back towards Mormonism. I respected that space that each of us were in, and as long as we didn't have that, I mean, I don't believe that I ever advocated to my kids that they leave Mormonism or that they leave their faith. And they have never asked me, although I know that in the background they were probably hoping that maybe I could come back to the church, but that was never an outward conversation that we ever had. We respected that boundary. I was where I was spiritually, and they were where they were spiritually, and I respected that, and outwardly they respected that for me.
That's really helpful. That's very helpful. Brandon, your thoughts on this?
Brian.
Brian.
That's right.
I called you Brandon the whole podcast?
No, that was the first time.
Oh, good. Brian.
I remember hoping that he would come to church with us. Like, we'd go visit him. And I think I remember us inviting you to come to church. And
I did a few times.
Yeah. And I think you noticed that it was weird or uncomfortable for us to go experience this other religion. And I think there might have even been like a trade, you know, like, come to church with me and I'll go to church with you and vice versa. You know, it's like, which I, you know, in hindsight, I think was a good thing to do, to experience those other religions. I do remember that, you know, inwardly we would hope that he would come to church and that would make it work out somehow, maybe that he were to come back to church. And, you know, I mean, I think not only within people that leave the church, but with people that have parents that are divorced, you know.
That's a good point.
There's always that want for things to be back how they used to be.
Pretty normal.
Whether it's divorce or leaving a religion or whatever, I think children naturally just want things to go back to when they thought it was ideal.
Yeah, that's a great story. You served a mission. How did you feel about your son going on a mission, Lawrence?
Well, my stepson went, my Brian went, and his sister went on missions. And so, again, you know, it was, you know, not easy sometimes writing out that check to help support them to go and, you know, preach against people like me. But at the same time, myself having served a mission and realizing that that's just what you do when you're in the LDS church, it's sort of expected, and understanding that they were trying to follow that path, and just realized that I just had to suck it up, you know, as a dad, and accept the fact that they were on that path, and that was that.
And I probably don't really have any insights into how difficult that was at times, because I would guess you felt harmed at times from the church and felt angry towards the church, and I honor that. We could probably do a whole podcast and on that, and I just recognize that there's pain and anger and just not being able to find a place in the church.
Well, when I was around my kids, I just shut up.
And so I admire you just having to channeling that perhaps in other directions and right. not bringing your kids into that.
Right.
And
I tried.
Think that's a sign of great maturity and great thoughtfulness.
I tried, and I'm Brian probably could maybe point out where sometimes it bubbled over.
Prop eight got kind of ugly.
And I couldn't shut my mouth on some topics.
It's probably okay.
Yeah. But I tried to minimize that and keep them out of my anger and let them practice their, you know, Mormonism and leave them alone.
Talk about Prop 8, Brian. You were living in California, I think.
I was living in California. I was living in the back house, right? Mm-hmm.
Were you married at the time? Were you in single at the time?
I was just fresh off the mission.
Okay.
I was dating long distance, my now wife. She's Brazilian, That's where I had served my mission. You can probably figure out how that happened.
That's awesome.
But so I was going to school and going to seminary, or I mean, institute, going to church. And it was just really bizarre because I'd be going to institute, I'd be going to church, and there would be over the pulpit people saying, okay, we're having a telethon this week. We're trying to call as many people and convince them to vote, you know, yes on Prop 8. And then I'd go home and, you know, it just got so heated. The whole subject just got so heated. It's like, maybe half joking, maybe not. It's like, if you vote yes on Prop 8, I'm going to disown you, kind of a thing, you know, coming from my dad and his partner. And it's just very just weird place to be as a, you know, return missionary, the LDS active member, being in that situation and just having to try to understand both sides of the issue and why everybody's so heated about it.
What principles did you learn from that experience that have helped you in your life? Because here you are in the middle of both worlds.
It taught
and
me
often
to...
we're just in one world and the other world is this other group that mm-hmm. we never see up front to humanize. So here right. you are kind of humanizing both groups and seeing both groups.
Yeah, I mean, it's painful. I mean, it's painful in the sense that you're forced to grow, you know, and to understand both sides. Because, you know, they say ignorance is bliss, right? So a lot of people have the luxury of not having to understand the other side, and they'll just ignore it, and they can just, you know, make their decision that what they believe is right, and nothing challenges it because they don't have a family member that's on the other side or whatever. So it forced me to never make quick decisions. I've always been I've always put a lot of thought into any decisions that I make, whether, you know, anything in my life, politics, life decisions, anything. I have to study out, you know, both sides of the issue and come to a conclusion. And it usually lands somewhere in the middle. I mean, everything that I've ever experienced, it's never been, you know, black or white. It's usually some shade of gray.
This is a proud parent moment for you, Lawrence, hearing your son talk like this.
Yeah. And when I grew up, I want to be just like him.
Yeah, that's, I think, a really thoughtful place to be. And it takes more mental energy and more thoughtfulness. But I would talk about some of our listeners will be in their 20s or teens that are just learning they have a gay parent.
Mm-hmm.
And they may feel shame or embarrassment about that. And they may, what would you say to those listeners that are just learning they have a gay parent?
I would let them know that it's not as bad as you think. You know, we'll talk about my film a little bit, but one Good. Of the things that the character says, you know, he kind of has an explosion, an argument with his dad, and says essentially that you've ruined my life. You know, and what the dad says is, I'm still your dad. I'm not going anywhere. You know, and if you think about it, like, a lot of hard things happen, a lot of difficult things happen in our lives. But in many cases, and hopefully most cases, you still have your family, whether you like the direction that everybody's taking with their life or not, you're still family. And if you want to maintain those relationships, you learn how to reconcile your differences and love each other regardless.
Why are you a better parent for your own kids because you have a gay dad?
Why am I a better parent?
That's a leading question, I know. Brian.
I know. I'm trying to see where you're trying to go with that. I think it's helped me, like we've talked about, to see, you know, that not everybody is, maybe not everybody is on that path of, you know, checking all the boxes of Mormonism, you know. I think if down the road one of my kids were to come out of the closet in any way, I would be better prepared to handle something like that. And what that means for their faith and whether they stay in the church or not. It gives me a little bit more empathy towards people, the other, as we learn in, you know, theory. In like psychology, you know, there's the other, And it helps me. I think I've been helped to understand the other a lot better because of my situation.
If there's parents, Lawrence, that are coming out in their 30s, 40s, 50s, or whatever, listening to the podcast, that's just starting for them, and what advice would you give to a parent that's coming out, that's still in a marriage?
What I practiced that was, I think, one of the most helpful things for me, and Brian could speak to it from his end, was stay consistent. And some people, as we mentioned earlier, LGBTQ, that come out of the closet, feel like that there's things that they haven't experienced, and they want to sort of take a hard turn and start living a life that they were never able, if you will, to live through Mormonism. It may include a lot of sexual activity. It may include drugs. It may include alcohol. And for me, the thing that I felt has served me best was to keep consistent. And this is what advice I would give to someone as an adult parent, is to stay consistent and honor that relationship that you have with those kids, and don't divert from that. Now, that isn't to say that we're not sexual human beings. And that isn't to say that as a non-Mormon, I don't enjoy a glass of wine. But keeping that and honoring, keeping that under control, and that's subjective, but keeping that within bounds and honoring the relationship that I have with my kids, similar to, but not exactly the same, being a Mormon parent as I would be being an out and proud gay parent who is not Mormon. But provide for them that consistency so that they don't see this huge, hard turn to some path that you never dealt with, and that you're going to put them through challenges with.
That's very thoughtful advice. It sounds like a go slow, be consistent, even though some parts of your life are changing. I like your visual of a hard turn. It doesn't need to be a dramatic hard turn. And for children, it may be better to see just the consistency, even though marriage is changing.
Absolutely.
That's very thoughtful advice. Let's talk about the film. You are an undergraduate and have a master's in film.
Yep. I have a master's in MFA in film from Art Center, College of Design.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I recommend it, but don't at the same time to everybody because it's student loans. Student loans.
How long ago did you get your master's, Brian?
It was 2015.
So 2015, so you've been out of that long school train for a while.
Yeah. Done a few fun projects since, leading up to the short film that I just made last summer.
And talk about deciding to do this film.
Oh, man. Well, I think grad school helped me realize that it's a story that I should tell, because one of the things I learned is that you should tell stories that are authentic. A lot of people like want to go write a movie that it's about, you know, a homeless person or something, a drug addict, and they have no experience in that world. And it's no surprise when that story or that script just doesn't work. It's not well done. So I learned pretty early on in my grad school that you should write things that are true to you, pull from your own experience, because they'll create better stories. And I started writing this short film at the beginning of my experience and as a grad student, and I pretty much workshopped it every semester throughout my time there until it was ready to shoot.
Wow.
By the time I was done. So in a way, it was kind of a master's thesis, even though I had another different master's thesis. But then I held on to it for a few years, I wanted to, people are always like, well, I want it to be perfect. You know, they're always waiting for the perfect time to do it. And that never happens. But I felt like when the policy change, a few years back, I don't remember, it was 2 or 3 years.
It was 2015, but I'm not positive.
So when that policy change happened, where they said that children of, same sex couples had to wait until they were 18 to get baptized, that really threw me for a loop a little bit. I didn't know how to interpret that, and there wasn't a lot of explanation that came out until weeks later. And so that was a tough time for me. And that's when I realized that there are probably people out there that are like me that would have been affected, that are affected by that kind of a policy change.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I have this script. It's workshopped. It's ready to go. I'd put it through some screenwriting competitions, and it did well. It performed well. It got semifinalists and a couple of finalists and another, some international competitions, and said, well, if other people think it's good and it seems pretty relevant right now to tell this story within the church community, at the very least, you know, for people to understand people in this situation. And then I got some encouragement from Arthur Van Wagenen, who's the head of XL, which is Deseret Books film distribution side. And he said, you know, I sent it to him and he said, this film needs to be made. And he was super supportive of it too. and I had my dad read it. Anyway, I guess we could talk about that, because that was pretty terrifying for me to write such a personal film that talks about my own life and, you know, revolving around the issue of my dad coming out as gay. And all of the thoughts and feelings that I'd never really expressed outwardly, they were all written into this script. And so the hardest thing for me was to send that to him and have him read it and hear what his reaction was to it. And I think I'm getting off the topic of what you originally asked.
This is just what we want to talk about.
But it took a few days for him to finally get back to me, and those were excruciating days. I didn't know what he was thinking when he read it, between when I sent it to him and when he finally read it and got back to me.
Tell us your experience reading this.
Well, I laugh because I loved it. I think my strongest reaction was, okay, Brian, this is you sort of coming out of the closet, telling the world that you have a gay dad. Here you're a Mormon kid, Mormon man, and now you're going to let the world know. You're not going to keep it, you know, hidden at all. Now you're going to let the world know. So my reaction was positive. I'm okay with people knowing that I'm gay. I've been out of the closet, and I have no qualms at all with people knowing and understanding that I'm gay. My concern was a little bit more for Brian and what he was going to experience letting the world know that he has a out gay dad. And so I was supportive. I don't think I've ever expressed any negativity towards the project at all. So me being identified in the film as this out gay dad, I'm fine with that. He's the one that's going to feel some level of coming out as a son of a gay dad.
Mm-hmm. Somebody said the other day, I think it was at the LDS Film Festival, they saw the film and they came up and talked to me afterwards. They said, you know, I always feel like when somebody comes out as LGBTQ, their family goes into the closet. And that's totally true, especially with the way things were in the 90s and the subject of homosexuality being so taboo. We definitely went into the closet in terms of not telling anybody that we had a gay family member, right? And so what I was most terrified about in him reading my script was seeing all my thoughts and feelings that I never expressed to him or to anybody, that were, you know, things that teenagers or children would, you know, naturally feel in that situation. But I always kept things to myself, and I always bottled up things, and I always tried to just be the peacekeeper and not, you know, make any waves throughout my whole life. And so I felt like I just had to finally get all of those thoughts and feelings out there.
What a great way to do it.
Which people usually put in a diary and then, you know, put away and nobody ever reads it. But this is one I was bringing out all of this raw emotion and letting my dad read it, you know. And it was all, a lot of it was, especially in the argument section of the film, was aimed at him. Whether it was, even though it wasn't the case anymore that I didn't feel those things, it's just the fact that I felt those at one time, I was terrified that he would, you know, be offended by all of that.
And it was not easy. It was rough, you know, to read that. But at the same time, number one, I knew it was fiction, and I didn't know how much of that Brian actually had felt. And I've asked him since then.
Good. But, I'm glad you've had that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, he's honest, and he's a film writer, and he writes fiction. But as he said, he also bases his work on what he knows. And so if there was some of that in there, I'm fine having that conversation as long as it's a rational, reasonable conversation. We never had that conversation face to face. I read that for the first time when I read the script for the film, but it's honest, and he was being honest. So how do you, even though I'm the father and I'm the sort of like the focal point of that honesty, how can I have an issue with that? I've been in enough therapy that I understand honesty and how honesty is a two-edged sword. You know, it cuts both ways. It can be very helpful, and it can also be pretty painful sometimes. So I was fine with that.
And do you think it's deepened your relationship now that this, that you've read the script and had these conversations and the film is produced?
Oh, definitely. I mean, from the very beginning, when I first thought of the story, we were on a road trip because, you know, him living in California and me living in Utah. I just asked him, I'm like, you know, you used to be a trucker. Tell me about that. And I just started writing down ideas. So the whole process of it being semi-autobiographical and half of the story being him, I couldn't just come up, make up his side of the story. I had to talk to him about what was the life of a trucker like, you know, what was it like being out and being a trucker and what kind of antagonism was there?
Great, you know, questions
directed towards you because of that. How did that affect your life? And so all of these things you see, they play out in the film and they help to give good character development, I think, of both the dad and the son by having both of those perspectives. So those conversations were great, and making the film was great. He was involved on the set shooting it. And then now that we're in the festival circuit, it's been great to see the variety of different reactions to it. Not all are positive. Some people say that it doesn't resonate with them. You know, some LGBTQ people say it doesn't resonate with them. But just having experienced all of this from beginning to end with him has definitely, you know, made our relationship stronger, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I think relationships get stronger when we have honest, vulnerable conversations. And yes. The maturity that you both have to have those conversations, and sometimes I'll get a little emotional, but I think the level of maturity to have those then has the ability, like it's done in your relationship, to strengthen. I'm really touched by some of the questions you asked your dad, like what was it like to be a trucker? Mm-hmm. And sort of be willing to hear his story. Some of that stuff you probably were never comfortable sharing because you just wanted to maybe, I don't know what the right word, protect your kids or just... But I would think from your point, just to have your son ask you about your life.
Right. I was kind of surprised because after when I moved to California, I got out of construction. I had, the trucking that I had done was with my family construction company and hauling equipment and taking my kids with me on some of these trips. And that was where Brian got the concept that he wrote about for Long Haul. Then I moved to California, got into project management, ended up with my master's degree. So
Both have master's degrees.
Yeah, I got
that's
my
awesome.
I got my MBA from Pepperdine while I was in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So I kind of put all of that behind me. So it was kind of interesting for me to hear him ask those questions about the former
interesting
life that I had lived in Utah and working for the construction company and doing the trucking, and then seeing his interest in wanting to write about that. That was really sort of surprising to me. So I'm glad that he did that because I thought it was a very interesting time. We go back, not only Brian, but his sister and my stepson and my youngest son as well. And it was just fun for us to sort of relive that to an extent. It was a difficult topic with the way it was written, mm-hmm. That they dealt with this situation the way it was. But in the end, it was such a positive thing. But I was just kind of surprised that Brian wanted to tackle that topic.
It was very nostalgic because I remember those trips, going on trips with my dad, you know, as a trucker. And as a little kid, your dad drives a truck. Coolest thing ever.
It's
like
the coolest thing ever.
And to be able to go on those trips with him, you know, and which we would do, I think it was probably weekend visitations that mm-hmm. we would do, kind of mm-hmm. like what I wrote in the script. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, those were always things. I remember very specific, I don't have a great memory at all, but some things that I do remember revolved around those trips going on trucking deliveries with my dad.
Talk about... I don't know much about the LDS Film Festival, mm-hmm. and help our listeners understand what that is, and your film has been a part of that, I believe.
Yeah. It was just a couple of weeks ago at the time of the recording. It was, so it's a festival that's geared towards, it's not a church endorsed event, but it definitely targets LDS filmmakers and people looking to make films and show them that not all of them have like a faith message necessarily. Maybe some of them are like a horror movie or a suspense or a thriller, but it's either they're either a faith message or they're just made by people that are LDS. And it's an opportunity for us to come together and show our movies and have a good time.
And what has the reaction been as you've shown your movie?
Well, it was very encouraging because it won the Audience Choice Award for the short film category, which was great. It's
really a wonderful accomplishment, Brian.
It really was. And it was really important to me too, because I feel like my film, it's never been my purpose. It's never been the film's purpose to take a side one way or the other, because it's easy when you're making a film about LGBT issues, especially for somebody that's in the church, to be anti-church or anti-LGBT, or, you know, it becomes political very easily. And I tried really, really, really hard to not take sides and just show a human experience, a family experience, that where it's just a couple of humans that are in this very difficult situation and they figure out how to love each other regardless. And I felt pretty validated when I got that award from the LDS Film Festival. It's a film about LGBTQ issue that was recognized as an audience favorite at the LDS Film Festival. So that's been the highlight so far of the festival run.
Really cool. Have you had people reach out to you and say, this is my family story, and this is, you know, just because you're both of you are talking about this subject, if you mm-hmm. had people say, this is, I now know I can talk to somebody about what's going on in my life.
Yeah, I've been taken by surprise by a couple people that I've worked with or known for a long time. And because I was making this film or because they saw it, they've reached out to me and they say, I'm a student at BYU right now and I'm gay and I'm a filmmaker and I loved seeing your film. Or somebody else that said, my dad came out to me years ago and he still hasn't come out to anybody else, but I'm really glad that you're making this film. So
I think you're destigmatizing and normalizing just that this happens mm-hmm. in society, and we need to sort of keep the communication channels open. What was it like for you, Lawrence, to watch this film with, you know, I assume you were in the audience.
Oh, yeah.
All these other people watching this film about your story.
Yeah. Well,
is that a healing moment for you?
It began for me, as Brian mentioned, I went to every day of the filming and was present. There were some exceptions when they did some
filming. How cool is that you were there?
I was thrilled. And it just so happened that I had just moved to Utah from Los Angeles just before the filming started. So it worked out really well timing wise. And so to witness it being filmed and seeing all of the work that was done behind the scenes, the people that were doing the acting, the crew, he had an amazing, amazing crew and actors. He really drew some great talent, and through some of the very difficult scene, and seeing the people's reaction, left us in tears, you know, and them who were, they had no inclination towards being outwardly assaulting a gay man, but who acted that way, and then seeing the physical reaction that they had after the scene was taken and their comments to me, and I got a lot of hugs. And letting me know that they did not feel that way at all in their hearts, and me knowing that. And so watching all of that and then to see it on the big screen was just very exciting. That was a very exciting day.
Was it healing for you?
It was healing.
Or do you feel like you kind of were healed at this point anyway?
Well, it healed me from the standpoint of Brian telling that story. And it's a, you know, parts of it, again, are not easy to sit through. But then seeing how it wrapped up and then seeing people's reaction to that. And yes, I mean, especially in the LDS Film Festival situation where these people are members of the LDS church and seeing them respond positively to a film on an LGBTQ topic was very affirming. It doesn't necessarily warm my heart towards coming back to Mormonism, but it made me realize that things definitely are changing. This would not have happened in 1995 when I came out of the closet. This would not have happened. So seeing the changes that are slowly coming to people, whether the church is totally there yet or if it's just the people that are coming maybe a little more quickly in some cases, and seeing their positive reaction was very affirming to me. And seeing that audience choice award, you know, which means that the people in the seats that are actually, you know, watching this, that was their favorite.
That's really cool. I love this story. It's a story of healing and hope and reconciliation, even though you two never were really split. But it's a deepening of your relationship. And I try to put myself in your shoes of being excommunicated on that Burbank night and then coming back to this LDS Film Festival and having active Latter-day Saints put their arms around you.
Right.
And recognize some of the difficulty of your road and wanting to lift your burden and mourn and comfort, which is sort of what Christ teaches us to do, and how helpful that might have been for you.
Really helpful, yeah.
And what you've done, Brian, to bring this, to make this happen, which is just, you know, it's professionally your career, but it's also part of our baptism covenants to bear and mourn and comfort and to lift people's burdens and to bring understanding. So I love the way you're bringing both of those together. Other thoughts that are on your mind, Brian?
I always like to mention to people that the film is about starting conversations. It's not about drawing lines in the sand, you know. And so I hope that people that see this, whether they have somebody in their family that is LGBTQ or not, but especially those, that's who I was, you know, I wanted to target people that were like me, that were out there that didn't know how to deal with that or what it looked like on the other end of it, you know, of all of the trials of reconciliation and all of that. I wanted this to be for them for sure. But I also wanted other people to be able to see this like you do when you go see any movie, to put yourself in other people's shoes for a couple hours, or in this case, 23 minutes, and gain a little bit more empathy maybe towards people that you don't understand.
I like that. And I like the way it doesn't have to be either or. You can add the word and. Mm-hmm. So I can be an active Latter-day Saint and love my LGBTQ brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a degrading of sort of, you know, being wishy-washy. I think it's just the doctrine that Christ taught. I can still stand for my beliefs and be who I am and love LGBTQ people. Now, some people are in our church that have, you know, so I don't want to paint in the picture that everybody's LGBTQ has left.
Right.
But even if they have left, I just think we can keep them in the circle of our family and our friendships.
Yeah.
And I sometimes joke, unless they join ISIS and want to bomb us, then I have a line. That's, you know, but most that I meet, even those that step away, just want permission to live their life the best way they feel that they can live it. And if maybe we treat them and put our arms around them, even if they're leaving, with love and support and kindness, I think they're more likely to make thoughtful decisions going forward and respect me as I'm trying to make my way in life if we try to respect others. So You're certainly a firsthand example of that. Other thoughts? I think some kids, one of the thoughts that come to my mind is that if I've got an LGBTQ parent, I'm going to be LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. Did you ever go down that road as a 10-year-old that I, you know, people think I'm going to be gay or I'm gay because I have a gay dad? Or did you just kind of realize that wasn't really something that you worried about?
Oh, definitely. I was worried about it, especially.
And maybe that's not a bad thing. I don't want to say that being gay is a bad thing.
No, Lawrence, it's just something
it's a harder road than being straight.
I've thought of that, and especially growing up in the 90s, you know, in Utah County, calling somebody gay or homo was usually done in a joking way and not usually meant as an offense, or if it was, it was just like between guy friends or whatever. And it was, so it was, but to think about it seriously, which eventually you do discover, or, you know, learn what being homosexual actually is, and the negativity that was associated with that definitely made, you know, me concerned that, well, if my dad's gay, does that mean I'm gay? And we go into that in the film a little bit too. Damn. You know, the son character gets called a bad word, which means homosexual, and, you know, he reacts to that in a way that, in a fearful way, like, and, you know, a little bit homophobic, as he's discovering, you know, as his sexuality is getting challenged, even as like a young teen.
I'm glad you addressed that in the film.
And it's pretty brief, but it's there, you know, because, well, and then also in the truck, you know, the antagonist that's getting after, that's teasing the dad character in the truck, says, well, essentially the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, you know, like father, like son, but using other stronger language. And that makes the son uncomfortable because he's already angry at his dad for essentially breaking up the family because of this thing. And so, yeah, it does explore that. The film doesn't really suggest any answers to any of this. It just presents it in a way that helps people to understand and empathize with it, and think about it and start conversations about it. But there are no easy answers, and I don't assume that I know any of the answers to any of this, other than that we can all still find a way to love each other regardless.
But Brian became pretty clear. He's told me, and he's mentioned before, that he's not gay.
Yeah.
He did not fall close to the apple did not fall close to the the gay tree.
I think the science supports, from all the science I've seen of children of LGBTQ parents, you know, that, you know, most kids are straight.
Right.
97% of the population straight, or 94 or 95, and that's just so. But I like the way, couple thoughts. One is, I like the way in the film you address that, because I think that's a potential fear that it's good to talk about. And I like that one of the things you said, both of you have said, that we just wanted to start a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can talk in our families and our friends in a thoughtful way, and even in our local congregations, then we're able to do better, as we can have a conversation and learn from each other and share and say what it is like it to be LGBTQ, and how, what's our responsibility to bear and mourn, and if we've got a family member, and if we've even got someone that stepped away. And I just think that's one of the things I love about the film, is that it starts a conversation, but I think it humanizes it because it's a real story. Mm-hmm. And both of you are real people. And so when people know you're in the audience of this film, I would want to come talk to you too, Lawrence and Brian.
Thanks.
And I think that's why I hope the film, you know, is seen by lots and lots of people.
Me too.
How can people learn more about the film? Brian, do you have a website?
There's a website, longhaulfilm.com. So you can track any of our latest progress. I haven't updated it for a while, but as we go through the festival circuit and hopefully win awards, or at least get selected to screen at some of these events, I'll be updating it there. And you can see all the cast and crew members and trailer and any kind of like fundraiser. We've been doing a fundraiser for film festival submission fees, just to help cover those, because those add up pretty quickly. But yeah, longhaulfilm.com is where you're going to go. It's also on Facebook, the Long Haul Movie.
Uh-huh.
Long Haul the Movie. That's what it is. Long Haul the Movie. And then it's on Twitter, but I don't really do Twitter. I tried it. You know, Instagram to keep up with also. So it's just so much social media to try to keep up with.
Instagram is Long Haul Movie, I think.
Long Haul Film.
Long Haul Film.
Are you still in a stage where you're trying to raise funds? Because it is not cheap to do what you're doing.
Yeah, there's a GoFundMe account that's still open. It's still accepting donations. That's to help cover the film festival circuit. And hopefully I get into some of the better festivals, like... you know, if I get into Cannes, for example, I'm going to have to travel to France, and which would be amazing, but it's expensive. And so I would hope to raise some money to help cover those costs.
Talk about your LDS faith, because I talk to a lot of people about their faith in the church, and I'm a believing member, but this issue has stretched me, as I've seen more than any other issue in my experience in the church, as I see just, I kind of call it that more chapters need to be written. I frame it up, the church's relationship with its LGBTQ members, like a 20-chapter book. We just have more chapters to write. We're not at chapter 20, but I don't pretend to say what chapter we're at, and I don't pretend to say what we should be doing. I'll leave that to the leaders. But the fact that there's a just more chapters to be written and it's not quite done yet is sometimes hard on people's testimonies.
Yeah, because they want answers right now.
They want answers, and they just realize we're not quite being able to fully meet the spiritual needs of our LGBTQ members. And I can say that as a faithful Mormon, and because I've just talked to so many, and I recognize there's just a gap there. And how do you sort of navigate that? In other words, I think a lot of people are looking for people perhaps like you that really kind of understand the complicated nature of this and still manage to stay. I think a lot of people I talk to that maybe are in a faith journey or even a faith crisis want to find a way to stay and are looking for people that kind of have been able to navigate this. Any thoughts for our listeners that are in that space?
Yeah. I mean, for me, my faith has always been a very personal thing. I've never really understood people that just get offended by gossip or something at church and then leave the faith altogether. That's always been baffling to me, because I guess I was lucky to have a testimony experience before my mission that has carried me through my faith. So I don't know if I have the best advice or anything, but I would just tell people that, you know, your faith is between you and God, and look for those experiences, look for those testimony experiences that help solidify where you think, you know, where you believe you feel you need to be. And if that's in the church, then hold on to those things. And when it gets tough, remember that that's the reason you're doing what you're doing and not for anybody else.
That's great. I love holding on to your faith, and I love holding on to spiritual experiences that we have that help us understand. So thank you for sharing some of that. We're kind of at the end, but I'd love to just see if there's any last thoughts. Lawrence, any last thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners? And then we'll have your son share any of his last thoughts and we'll conclude.
Well, because the film came about and started all of these conversations that we're having, and seeing it, you know, again on the screen and seeing Brian's work in bringing this topic forward, I would just say, not only this film, but any opportunity like your podcast to deepen a person's experience with the topic of LGBTQ, however that is, and as Brian said, to patiently watch and listen, and I think the name of your podcast
is Love. Listen, Learn, and Love.
Listen, Learn, and Love.
It's kind of what I had to do.
Right. So doing that and being patient with that, I'm not the best person to advocate one way or the other. As Brian said, everybody's faith is their own, is between them and God. I personally could not stay in the church, being with my honesty, whatever my honesty was. And so it's sort of sometimes is interesting that people can do that. And I admire that if they can. I do. It wasn't me, but I admire that. But just to hang on and see how this is evolving, not only in the Mormon church, but also in the world, and see the steps that are going, that we're taking forward. And good for you for this podcast and helping people understand it better. And good for Brian for writing a film that's being accepted by members of the church, tackling that topic and learning through this. It is fiction, but it is semi-autobiographical of how a son can come to terms with his dad's situation and come through the other side and be supportive of that.
Thank you, Lawrence. Brian, any thoughts?
I just hope that anybody listening to this has, you know, let's see what I'm trying to say. I hope that anybody listening to this can know that they're, if they're in a situation where a parent has come out and they're feeling maybe lonely, or that, you know, nobody understands their specific situation, and everybody's situation is unique. But I'm just hoping that anybody that sees this and reads about it or hears about it knows that there are others out there that know what you're going through, and, you know, everybody has their trials in their lives, whether it be family or religion or whatever it may be, health issues, that there are people that can relate, and that there are no easy answers, but there's a way to still feel love and to be with your family. And I hope that people also feel like they can tell their story. You know, this is something that was very personal to me, and I was very terrified to tell it because not a lot of stories like this had been told before.
Right.
And so
it was great courage.
So I'm hoping that other people do it too, between this film and Jen Lee's other films that she's helped make. That's pretty much all there is out there right now in terms of films content or documentaries about, well, there's probably more documentaries, but films that cover the subject. I feel like that's maybe one of the chapters of the church, is having cinema that's done by members of the church that helps explore these issues that may not be things that we're used to hearing people talk about at church. But
yeah, I like that. And I love the content you're developing. And I've had it's interesting, since I started the podcast, I've had several gay parents say, "Do you have any podcasts for my kids to listen to? Because I'm about ready to come out." Mm. And that's why we've done a few of these, and this is about the third one in this category. But now with your film, that will be another
resource.
Or another resource, and it's very personal. It's very humanizing, even more so than a podcast. I'm thinking of Elder Gay's conference talk. There's just some things he talks, as our listeners may know, about giving a blessing to his sister, who was never fully active in the church. He never was really in the gospel, and he gave her a blessing right before she died, and he felt a rebuke of the Spirit for never seeing her for who she really was and defining her life by, was she an active member of the church or not? And it was a very instructive talk, you know, and here you are, Lawrence. I hope we're not defining you. Your son isn't, but I hope we're learning not to define you of, are you a member of our church or not? Because in this conference talk, this general authority gave a blessing to his sister and was rebuked by the Spirit for not fully seeing her how God saw her. And he even shared a couple quotes, and I'll read these quotes, one of them at least. Joseph Smith said, "While one portion of the human race is judging and condemning the other without mercy, the great parent of the universe looks upon the whole human family with fatherly care and parental regard, for his love is unfathomable." So I look at that God we believe in, and I have to think he's smiling that you two, you know, are together, and that you two have found common ground, and that you two are a father and son, and that you've been talking to your dad about his trekking trips that used to go on together and sharing these experiences together. And I just, you know, I love that. And here's the other one that I'll read just in closing from Brigham Young, in Elder Gay's October 2018 talk. "I wish to urge upon the saints to understand men and women as they are, and not understand them as you are." And so to me, that has implications for an LGBTQ person. And if I'm a straight person, I can't learn about LGBTQ people from other straight people. I have to go talk to LGBTQ people. And I have to go see a movie like you've produced, Brian, so I can understand what it's like to be you and walk in your shoes, Lawrence. And then I can do what Brigham Young's asking us to do. "I wish upon the saints to understand men and women as they are, and not understand them as you are. And then you can bear to mourn and comfort and bear burdens." So I love some of those quotes. And thank you, Lawrence and Brian, for joining us on another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love. And thanks, our listeners, for tuning in. Richard Osler signing off.